Good morning, listeners, and welcome to this week's Ag Report. I'm Jim Finn. Later on in the programme, I will be talking to Tara McCarthy, who is the CEO of On Board Bia. I will also be talking to Niamh O'Toole, who is a veterinary surgeon, and I will be talking to Amy Ford, who is the deputy news editor with the Irish Farmers Journal. My first guest this morning is Donal Milan, and Donal is the manager for Teagasc in County Tipperary. Good morning, Donal.
Morning, Jim. How are you?
I am very well, thank you. Another year, Donal, and we're sitting down at the beginning of the year, and I suppose we always have a little look back at what happened the previous year, and then we'll go into a little bit going forward. So how was 2021?
So overall, Jim, I suppose considering the COVID challenge and everything, it turned out to be quite a good year. From an economic perspective, there's plenty of challenges there. But you know, the all the main enterprises stood up. Maybe the pigs were under a bit of pressure. But the dairy, the dry stock, the tillage, sheep, all stood up well. And, you know, I think weather-wise was pretty good as well. Climate-wise, for last year was good. And, you know, I think generally speaking, you know, people were happy that it was a, that last year was a good year.
Yeah, okay.
And, of course, I was going to say, there's good and bad and everything. Towards the end of the year, then we saw the huge rise in, I suppose, energy prices, which led to huge rise in fertilizer prices in particular. And I suppose that's put up a bit of a flag. I think overall, Jim, just looking at it there, you know, you're looking at in the year ahead now, you're looking at maybe an increase in costs, I think, or sort of economic experts reckon an increase in costs of about 13% across the board.
Yeah.
Mainly due to energy and fertilisers.
And would it be as low as that? But, you know, looking at the farming press and some of the doom and gloom that's out there with regard to prices next year, that would seem to be a very low estimate, Donal.
I mean, not really, because 13% of your overall cost now is significant.
Yeah.
Okay, obviously fertilizers will have more than doubled in some cases, but we said balanced effect across all your costs would reflect something in the region of around 13%. Now that is significant.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if you take, say, I think cost per litre last year were coming in around on the dairy side, were coming in around 25 cents per litre.
Yes.
So if you push 13% onto that, you'll be going up to 28.9 cents. You know, that is significant now when you put it across the board. But obviously, the anything to do with energy will have increased rapidly. You know.
Right. Now, of course, you had to contend for the second year then in a row with COVID. Are you pleased with the way in which the advisory service handled COVID in 2021?
Yeah, Jim, look, I suppose to some extent we're fed up with talking about COVID and listening to it as well. So, look, I think we seem to be in a kind of a better place again now. Unfortunately, every time we seem to be going well with COVID, it comes up and bites us again. So hopefully things will travel on a bit now. But certainly the situation is improving, and we're certainly aiming for normal operations now as quickly as possible. And but we have coped well. We've used all the tools that are there, from Zoom to you name it. You know. So but certainly looking forward now to more normal operation. I think everybody's in the same boat. And you know, 2 years is a long time at this game, really. I suppose the good thing, though, in fairness. And the same applies to the economy as well. The overall economy has stood up well. I think Ireland is the strongest economy in Europe in terms of growth rate last year. And over 2.3 or 2.03 million people working. So, you know, when you consider the challenge of COVID from a health perspective and people's mental health as well, it is good to see that the economy has stood up anyway, you know.
Yeah, it's good you talk there about the economy, because my next guest this morning is going to be Tara McCarthy from Board Bia, and their results were very encouraging.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So, back to normal operations as much as possible. Anyway, we'd be kind of aiming for that all the time, because obviously you have to cut your cloth in depending on what happens. And but there's some big challenges out there for farming, and I think you're very well, your listeners are probably very aware of a lot of them. And but I think there's good news around some of them as well. I suppose the big one is the climate change, Jim.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, we're going to be hit there with a target of somewhere between 22% and 30% reduction in carbon by 2030. Which I suppose one good bit of news started coming through there is that the research findings that are coming out now are starting to look better all the time in terms of some of the practices that we've been pushing there now for the last couple of years. The protected urea. And the use of lime and the multi-species for clover and so forth, and the low emission slurries, the figures that we were kind of going on, as the more data is coming out, those figures are looking better again, which is very encouraging. And obviously we'll be looking forward to more of that data coming through, you know. While the you know, and I suppose there's a lot of talk out there in relation to what should be done, but I think in relation to agriculture, it's such an important industry in this country. It needs to be protected as much as possible, and certainly we'll be doing our uppermost in terms of research and advisory to support it in every way we can.
Donald, do you see, you mentioned multi-species grasses, do you see your advisors being extremely busy over the coming year trying to, I suppose, encourage farmers to, when they are seeding, to put in multi-seed swarf?
Yeah, I suppose if I was to start, the most important one that we would see, maybe the easiest win, if you like, is a protected urea.
Yeah,
there's a huge gain in terms of, from a carbon point of view, in terms of your protected urea, and it's much more economical than say use of CAN and even ordinary urea. I suppose there's a number of actors along the way in terms of merchants, farmers, and then the importers, and it just takes a while maybe to treat the urea, so just to get that chain working maybe better. Really, we should be nearly moving towards 100%. Protected urea, because the results of it are very, very good, and it is one of the biggest gains you'll get in terms of dealing with climate change and carbon. The clover and the multi-species, you know, there's, again, there's a lot of the issue maybe with clover and multi-species, maybe up to now farmers have found that maybe they're a little bit difficult to manage, take a little bit more management. We've got very good results across the Salahead area, you're very well aware there. There's lots of great work on Salahead there. They've got obviously got great results from clover and Salahead. And certainly in some cases at farm level, very good as well. But it does take that little bit more management, Jim, and I think maybe a little bit, you know, but if, we really have to look at that. And certainly with the price of fertilisers now as well and reduction in nitrogen, there's a lot of potential there.
Now, I know you want to mention something about calf health, considering we're on the brink of cows calving across the whole of Tipperary.
Look, maybe I mentioned the challenge of climate change. I suppose another one there is calf welfare.
Yeah.
And probably the third big one then would be water quality. They're the sort of the big challenges have been thrown at farming and agriculture, I think, at the moment. You know, so I suppose if you take the calf situation, we're going to be looking at a lot of the beef production, I'd say, coming from the dairy herd over the next couple of years. And, you know, there's a lot of big numbers on some farms. And it's just, you know, in terms of maybe up to now, you could sell your calf as quickly as possible and all this stuff. But there's regulations there now. They can't leave the farm for a couple of weeks. And, you know, and certainly if they're being exported. So there's plenty rules and regulations around them. And I think farmers want to do the right thing by to make sure that calf welfare is well managed. This is so important for the industry. Then in water, I suppose, again, you know, I think everybody's aware of the importance of water quality. Look, we have an ASAP program in place in conjunction with co-ops and etc. It's working very well, you know, but those messages in terms of like buffer zones, all that sort of stuff, in terms of managing water quality are very, very crucial. So they're the three sort of big challenges, we say, Jim, anyway, that we see out there, you know.
Okay. You also have a series of webinars coming up over the coming months. And I know myself that you had an excellent one last week on slurry and slurry spreading and how important slurry is going to be to the farmer going forward. So can you give us a flavour of the ones that are likely to be coming up?
Yeah, Jim, and you mentioned the slurry there, and I think every farmer is becoming more and more aware of the value of slurry. And getting out for early grass and that, like getting maybe a couple of thousand gallons of slurry out might be sufficient in many cases. So there's big scope there maybe to reduce, and actually if it's well managed and using the low emission systems and so forth. Our advisors have planned a few webinars coming up there, Jim, because I suppose we were kind of taking the COVID into account. So regardless of whether our activities will be outdoor or maybe events and so forth like that, but certainly we've three or four webinars planned there now. The first one is next week there.
And
they're all on a Wednesday at 7:30. Maybe for an hour, though. We wouldn't have them too long. We don't want to drag things on. So just maybe short, sharp, and give a bit of time for a bit of questions and so forth. The one on next Wednesday there, the 26th, is planning for spent fertilising.
Yes.
And then the following week, or the following month, on the 23rd of February at 7:30, we have a dry stock one, cattle to grass, in the spring of 2022, dealing with all the issues there relevant to that particular time. Then maybe moving out back onto the dairy and on the 23rd of March, we're looking at breeding, maybe breeding, what we're calling the title of it, breeding from 9% meal solids. And then just to bring some diversification into it, maybe on the 20th of April, Wednesday, 20th of April, then we'll have a webinar looking at maybe at diversification options. Maybe in particular now there's a lot of money going into organics, and I know Joe Keller had to that picture there last week, so that we'll maybe do a little bit on that there in April. I should also maybe mention, Jim, another activity maybe that's a little bit novel. There's an awful lot going on, but what we're also doing is we hope to start maybe at least one, if not two, new ladies-only discussion group. And there's a bit of demand for that out there, and I think there is a lot of... there's a lot of women involved in agriculture. We have a long-standing ladies group, so we were hoping maybe we might start one and maybe possibly two ladies groups shortly as well. If anyone is interested in that out there, maybe to contact our education officer, that's Clara McGriskin, at the Thurles office.
Okay, well, look at Donald, we're out of time, but look at, thanks very much for joining us this morning and giving us a flavour of what you are going to be doing across the county, particularly for the next 4 months. Listeners, that was Donald Milan, who is the manager of Chagas in Tipperary. Listeners, my next guest this morning is the CEO of On Board Bia, Tara McCarthy. And Tara's with me because they issued their annual report last week with regard to Irish exports. And it's a really good story again, despite the year we're after having in 2021. Good morning, Tara, and thanks ever so much for joining us once more on Tip FM.
Good morning, Jim. Absolutely delighted to have the chance to chat with you.
You must be a very happy woman with the report you issued last week.
Well, I guess what I am is a very proud individual, to be honest with you, Jim, because the performance of the industry that I work in and have worked in for almost 30 years now, it just continues to deliver. You know, it's now valued. Our exports of our food and drink industry, and that's kind of every parish in Ireland, really, they reached a record this year, notwithstanding all the challenges in the background. So 13.5 billion euro was exported of food, drink and agriculture products from Ireland last year. And that's up 4% on the year before. But in case anyone says, oh, well, last year was a bad year, so of course they'd be up on that one, it's actually up on pre-pandemic levels as well. So if I go back to 2019, and that was a record year, it's broken that limit again. It's up 2% on the 2019 figures.
One of the biggest challenges, apart from COVID, was Brexit. Because it was the first full year of, we'd say, restrictions going into the UK.
Yeah, the UK market has stayed stable for us, which has been fantastic. And I guess there has been, we've always said the UK should never not be important to us. We have to maintain a focus on the UK market. It represents such a huge element of everything we do. It's 33, it's a third percent of our export, 33%. 4.4 billion euro, and it needs prioritisation, it needs focus. But at the same time, and parallel to that, we need to protect our industry and make sure we're diversifying all of the time as well. And if I go back to that 2016 time, Jim, of the Brexit vote was there 37% of our exports were going to the UK, but it was a smaller total. It was two billion less of our total, and 37% of it was going there. So whilst we stayed stable all the time going in, its proportion has gone down, and we've been growing faster everywhere else. So our international markets have grown, and our European markets have grown, and they've both grown quite well this year for us. I was just going to say that Brexit, though, is probably only one of the many challenges that the food industry has navigated in the past couple of years as well, because you have COVID, you have Brexit, but I think people are becoming quite conscious of, you've all of the costs in the background increasing as well. So I think there isn't a home in Ireland that's not sensitive to the energy costs that it has. I'd say there isn't an employer that's not very sensitive to the labour challenges they have. Every farmer knows about the feed and fertiliser increase in costs that they're experiencing. They might be less aware, but the whole idea of shipping costs has gone more or less out crazy in some of the numbers, in that if you try to get a container from Shanghai to Europe in June 2020, you'd have paid $1,000 for it. If you wanted to get that exact same container in July 2021, you'd have paid $7,400 for it. So all of those are the kind of input costs that farmers are facing, that factories are facing, and that eventually you'd have to say the consumers may be facing as well, as those prices can't be absorbed by the low margin food industry.
Okay, let's look then at the sectors. Which of the sectors performed the best in 2021?
Well, if I go to it, and each sector has its own story, and within each sector, would you think there's another story again? So if I start with the biggest sector, so dairy is our largest sector. It's 5 billion out of that 13.5 billion. And it had a fairly stable year because there was a couple of dynamics happening in that sector. Would you believe it? For the first time ever, more than 50% of our dairy exports went outside the UK and the EU. So it's worth more. Our international markets are worth more than the UK and the EU together. And so that's interesting in itself. Our cheese exports went up by 15%. So they're now at €1 billion. Our butter exports are almost at €1 billion, at €997 million. However, what gave a slight drag to our dairy exports and why it was stable rather than growing with the strong growth in cheese and butter was our specialist nutrition. So that was very much on the infant nutrition figures. They were quite depressed last year, particularly with a slowdown in our exports to China. I move on then to our meat exports, Jim, we have for the total meat and livestock exports up 4%, represents around €3.5 billion. That's up 7% from 2019. And I guess when you put all that in context, it's still this is our first year of Brexit, and our food and our meat exports are still quite strong. Very interestingly, our beef exports are up 9%, even though the volume of beef that we exported is down 11%. So beef performed very, very well there. And sheep meat, same, performed very, very well, up 15%, even though similarly the volumes were down 9%. But our pig meat industry had a tough year. Pig meat was down 3% in exports, over about €500 million, €542 million, and its volume, though, was up. So we sold more but got less for it, which is the counter of what we did in beef and sheep meat. And again, pig meat is coming off the back of three or four extraordinary years of positivity, but it's in a very, very tough place at the moment. And again, China is playing a big, big role in that there's been a lot of movement, I guess. It's China, and then there's this animal disease, ASF, that has hit China, but it's also hit Germany and some countries in Europe. And that's had quite a depressed effect on our pig meat industry. If I was to move on then to the third sector, Jim, it's the prepared consumer foods industry.
Yes.
And that's all the value-added products. So when you're thinking about ready meals, you're thinking about pizzas or bakery, or the sweets and confectionery, that had a pretty positive year. That's up 3%. That's around, the value of that nowadays is around €2.5 billion. Very dependent on the UK, and we cluster all the value-added products. So companies down your neck of the woods now, like Rib World or Oak Park or Blanconino, there in Clonmel, all of those companies would be part of that TCF sector, very strong in the UK. And they would, anybody who was involved in retail really in that sector did reasonably well. And those in food service were probably in more of a recovery mode with the opening and closing and opening and closing. Seafood is probably less of an industry for Tipperary, but it too did well. It was up 6%, a year of recovery where all the high value products like oysters and shellfish, they got hit very hard last year. They're in big recovery this year, up 25%. But still, our whitefish probably sent more to the home market than to exports. And they obviously, both our pelagics and our whitefish, had a challenge because they had reduced quota as part of the EU-UK trade agreement when Brexit was finally arriving. And then finally, the other two sectors, first of all, horticulture. Our horticulture industry had a fantastic year, up 14%. And really a big driver of that, Jim, was mushrooms. And I know mushrooms had a tough time at the beginning of that whole Brexit conversation. But would you believe it, our mushroom exports were up 31% last year. And that's very much driven by people were scratch cooking more. People were at home rather than going to the office for their lunches, etc. So they were putting mushrooms in more of their ingredients, and consumption of mushrooms increased in the course of the year. And then the final sector to touch on today, Jim, is drinks. They obviously last year had a very tough year when you think of all of the bars closed everywhere in the world, duty-free closed everywhere in the world. But they've recovered significantly this year. So they're up, would you believe, 19%. But it's a recovery from what they lost last year. So valued at 1.62 billion, driven really by the premium that we sell in premium whiskies, the cream liqueurs, a lot going on in the US market there as well. So they did very, very well. Beer probably did less well because it's probably more to the UK and the EU, which was and more focused on bars as well. So they had quite a tough opening closing. They were down 3%, but our whiskey, would you believe it, was up 25%.
You can't beat Irish whiskey, I can tell you that much. Just one last question to you, Tara, this morning. Are you optimistic for the future and for what 2022 will bring?
Jim, I suppose I have to confess to being optimistic by nature, so forgive me for that. But I do think that the food industry, if I look at the global drivers, notwithstanding, there's an inflationary pressure that we have to be very cautious of. But if you look at what's happening in our consumption levels of meat and dairy, they're in positive domains. So we would expect, at least notwithstanding all of the unknowns that it's very difficult to predict, but notwithstanding that, the predictions that we're seeing for next year for both meat and dairy are very positive. Obviously, there's a new phase of Brexit coming at us in July of next year, of this year. Yes. Where they're now going to be doing a lot of checks. We've had an exemption of 6 months for that. So obviously we'll be using that 6 months very wisely on looking at every challenge the EU is facing as they deal with these inspections already and learn from their mistakes maybe and take that on board so that we don't have as much of a steep learning curve as they're having at the moment. So I would say in general, positive outlook for our industry, a lot of challenges out there. Obviously, inflation being one, the drive to sustainability, we know we have to get even better at it. Like our farmers are making huge efforts, our producers through Origin Green are making fantastic efforts where we would argue among the best equipped in Europe and in the world to communicate what we're doing, but we still have to do more. And that whole cost of transitioning to greener production, the whole carbon impact of production, they're all challenges that we have to face into this year, Jim. But I do think from the market's perspective, the outlook remains very positive.
Tara McCarthy, thank you ever so much for joining us this morning. That, listeners, was Tara McCarthy, who is the CEO of On Board Bia. Listeners, my next guest this morning is Niamh O'Toole from the Borrisaleigh Veterinary Clinic. And it's been a while since we've done a bit on small dogs and cats and the various other animals that we have as pets. So Niamh is going to give me some information with regard to how we should look after our pets. What are the necessary things each and every pet owner should be doing, irrespective of whether it is a cat, a dog, or maybe a lizard, but I don't know. Niamh, you're very welcome. Grant to have you talking. As I said, it's a while since we spoke on this programme about small animals, so you're very busy with small animals.
Yes, thanks, Jim. So, yeah, we see lots of pets, mainly dogs and cats, here, and I suppose, yeah, there's just some basic things we can do to ensure that they're healthy and not going to be ill themselves and not have any issues if they're on farms as well, passing problems to cows and that kind of thing. So
okay, so if we take somebody got a puppy at Christmas, or somebody gets a puppy for their birthday or whatever the case may be, a child, you know, what's the first thing they should do with regard to looking after that animal?
Yeah, so taking it to the vet, their local vet, to have them checked out is a good idea, and make sure that they're healthy and that they've got a healthy puppy. And getting them their vaccinations to prevent them from becoming unwell. Worming, it's important, especially with puppies, to do regular deworming, and kittens and adult dogs as well. It gets less frequent as they get older. And I suppose to just ensure they're healthy. And the other important thing is microchipping, to make sure that their microchip is registered to their current owner, that they can be found again if they're lost.
Okay, and it can also be found if they do damage.
Exactly.
which of course is very, very important.
Yeah.
And given that most of Tipperary is rural then, so people have to be really mindful of their dogs and not let them out at night time straying or worrying animals.
Yes, it's really important to have a secure place for the pet, you know, to keep them off the road, off out of the fields, and to protect, obviously, our livestock and also for the animal themselves. You know, we have noticed a big reduction in dogs being hit by cars and stuff over the last 10 years or so, I would say. You know, I think people are being much more careful, but, it, you know, one dog can do a lot of damage, or one pack of dogs can do a lot of damage. So it is important that everyone has somewhere confined that they can know where their dog is at night time.
Right. And have you had incidents here in Tipperary or in the locality of where dogs got loose and worried sheep or cattle?
Yeah, I suppose we hear it from the client's point of view, the farmer point of view. Most of the time those dogs are not, we don't know who their owners are, and oftentimes they aren't caught, you know, so, and they can obviously do huge damage to sheep particularly, and this time of year now, for the next couple of months, the ewes are pretty vulnerable, so.
Yeah, they are extremely vulnerable, and then of course the ewe can't move at the same speed as a cow or a calf or.
Yeah. And I think they just don't tolerate those kind of stresses very, very well, you know.
Coming then to a cat, what does one have to do for the cat?
Yeah, so the biggest thing for farm cats, and cats are great on farms to control rodents and a very natural way of controlling them. So neutering cats is really important from a young age, just to make sure that they don't get out of control, and it can happen really quickly. And so they can be usually neutered from an average of 4 or 5 months old, and they can actually breed from that age as well, especially now coming into spring. So they can go from a kitten to a mother very quickly. So it's important to have them neutered, and then just to have them wormed as well. Obviously with sheep, cats can transmit some of the abortion bacteria that sheep can suffer from. So it's important to just control the populations and make sure the cats that are around are healthy and well.
Yeah, and that they stay around the farmyard rather than roam the fields at night time.
Yeah, well, you can't really control a cat. hard to keep them under tabs, but they sort of do their own thing. But they are great for controlling of rodent populations, you know.
Yeah, I'm talking then about neutering. With regard to, do most people now get their pet neutered?
Yeah, it's very popular now. I think it prevents a lot of health issues and controls populations. And with dogs, you know, there are some diseases and conditions they can get as they get older if they're not neutered. And, you know, there is a lot of, we're back to the stage of there being no longer a shortage of puppies. So, you know, it can be hard to find homes, good homes for additional dogs.
And staying with the cats and the dogs, what about lice?
Yeah, so if you see
and
your pet,
and,
yeah, if you see your pet scratching, it's really important to treat them for any little bugs, creepy crawlies they might have. It's more of a problem in the summer, but if your pet is in the house, then it can be a problem all year because we've got mild temperatures, you know, mm-hmm. all year round. But for outdoor pets, it's more of a problem in the summer.
Yeah, because I can remember when I was farming and we had a dog on the farm, needless to mention, nearly every farmer has a dog, that ticks were very prevalent.
Yeah, and they can transmit disease to the dogs as well. Lyme disease is something that people obviously can get, and so can pets, and it can make them really unwell. So obviously preventing, and most of those treatments treat fleas and ticks and lice and all together. And we have really sophisticated medications now that are really effective compared to maybe 20 years ago, you know.
Yeah, you see cats with collars. Are they for the fleas?
Sometimes, yeah. We don't find the collars so good. So it's more spot-ons and tablets now as well for dogs. But yeah, the collars can be a little bit dangerous for cats as well, getting if they're up a tree or somewhere exciting, they might get caught.
Rightio. Coming to the more exotic then, you know, people, I can just remember when my children were young, they had guinea pigs and they had little furry rabbits and things like that. Do you see much of those?
We don't see many. I think in Tipperary, I think they're probably more common in the cities, and rabbits and small furries, as you call them, more common in the cities. But we see some guinea pigs and rabbits, yeah.
Right. And what then about birds?
Birds, we see very few birds. It's usually maybe a wild bird that has been injured, you know, that may need, if they're mildly injured, or sometimes quite frequently, actually, the homing pigeons, racing pigeons, will be exhausted and someone will pick them up. They're very tame and they have little rings on their legs so we can track their owner, which is great. And they usually either pick them up or the bird takes a couple of days to rest and flies home eventually. Right. We believe.
Well, you believe they would anyway, but they may not. And then, I suppose, dealing then, I know you mentioned that you'd see less of it, but dealing then with the injuries that dogs and particularly cats and dogs get, that must be rather difficult.
Yeah, and it can be. They can have some really serious catastrophic injuries, you know, ranging from mild. We have a cat in today with a broken toe and a broken jaw, and it's pretty mild. But, you know, they can obviously be pretty seriously injured, and it's very upsetting for their owners, obviously, who are quite attached to them, you know. But we've places now that we would refer a lot of our patients to for specialist surgeries, and there's huge ability to treat them now, you know.
Right, one last question to you. Do you look after the bigger animals at all?
We do, and I do. Yeah, so I quite enjoy the farm work. Our small animal site has gotten busier, but we still, you know, we're in rural area in Bursley, and we see a lot of our dairy clients, beef, and few sheep clients left as well. Still.
So, okay, there's going to be some very early mornings or late nights coming up during the springtime for difficult calvings.
Exactly, yeah. We still have some suckler farmers holding on, and obviously we always have the dairy cows that can, the odd one, get into trouble. So it's a busy time of year ahead.
Right, okay. Well, look, thanks very much for having a word with us. Your last words to pet owners?
I suppose enjoy their pets, and people are getting great enjoyment out of their pets now while we can't meet our friends and family as much as we would like.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Niamh. That, listeners, was Niamh O'Toole from the Burris Veterinary Clinic here in Bursley. Listeners, as I said at the top of the programme, my final guest this morning would be Amy Ford from The Journal, and Amy is the Deputy News Editor. And Amy and I are going to talk about two topical things. But first of all, we're going to start off talking about inspections that the HSA are going to be doing with regard to calving pens and safety around calving over the next couple of weeks. As a matter of fact, this particular programme is being launched on Monday. Good morning, Amy, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, Jim.
Amy, this, I suppose, initiative from the HSA that's going to be launched on Monday, what's this all about?
Yeah, so the Health and Safety Authority this Monday is going to begin what they're saying is a 2-week intensive farm safety inspection campaign. And this latest campaign, you know, the HSA roll these out every year and focus on different I suppose, topics around farms. It could be machinery, it could be anything else, working with, you know, if there's fallen wires, working from a height, all of those. But this time of year, it's going to focus on safety during calving season. So the focus is going to be on the safe management of livestock this calving season, when the risk of injury to farmers obviously increases. So Pat Griffin, the senior inspector with the HSA, has said that while in 2021 there was a decline in farm fatalities, he's saying there's still far too many deaths in the agriculture sector, and a substantial number of very serious injuries. So he said that working with livestock is a key incident trigger, and farmers must make their physical safety an absolute priority. And during this time of year, which includes the calving period, increased fatigue and stress levels are common, he said. But he said that early planning and preparation can make a significant difference in the safe management of livestock. So the HSA has outlined a number of key questions that you should ask yourself while you're working with livestock. So is there a plan in place to minimise the risk of an attack? Has an adequate physical barrier been established between the farmer and a freshly calved cow when you're tagging, treating and handling calves? You know, is there adequate lighting in the yard and farm buildings? Do you need help? And are there extra resources, trained and experienced, basically, whether that's in your family or farm workers? Mm-hmm. And I suppose, are facilities there adequate for loading and unloading animals? So there's a lot there to kind of take into place. So, you know, it's very key. If there's no farm, if there's no farmer, there's no farm, basically. And they're really warning that, you know, farmers should take the utmost care of themselves this calving season.
And from your experience, or from the bit of research that you have to do, whether it's weekly or at any time during the year, are you aware that there are quite a lot of farmers who may not have the proper facilities in?
Well, I think that's really improved in the last decade or so. Anyways, I'd say there still are a very small number of farms where you know, facilities aren't up to scratch for one reason or another. But the vast majority of Irish farms have adequate, shall we say, safety precautions in place, or safe animal handling facilities.
Right, because maybe you were on the same tour that I was on in the Lions Farm when they did a safety demo up there, or they had a safety day. And I was very impressed with particularly with the calving facilities that they had, and how safe it would be for a farmer to calve any type of a cow, whether it was a suckler herd or whether it was a dairy cow.
Yeah, no, I actually haven't been there, but I have heard great things. Mm. But I suppose the key thing is that, you know, if you're going into the calving shed, make sure that, you know, if you need someone to help you, whether that's calving a cow or handling a cow, have that person there if you can, and just to take the utmost care, basically. Like, the HSA figures show that over the last 10 years, 196 people have actually lost their lives in farming-related work across the country, and of this number, 38 of them involved livestock, and last year alone, working with cattle accounted for 3 fatalities. So, something to take very serious.
Of course. Have you any idea, are these going to be unannounced inspections?
The HSA hasn't made that clear, but no. I'd say that it could be a mix of both. But you know, you should be prepared for any inspection, where unannounced inspections happen, obviously through other schemes, in other schemes in farming, and then there's obviously usual inspections. But for any inspection, anyways, you should be well prepared for that.
Okay, so that's a thing. So farmers should be aware that they may get an inspection over the next couple of weeks, and be prepared for it. But then again, they should be prepared for the whole 365 days of every year. Moving on from that, I heard there's 2 ships on the way to Ireland, cattle ships. What can you say about those? Will you fill me in, please?
Yeah, I can, of course. So my colleague Adam Woods has that story this week. So 2 Irish exporters have livestock ships steaming their way to Irish ports in the coming days, I suppose. The Finola M is currently in the West Mediterranean, and that's due to dock in Greenore on Tuesday. And then this ship will be loaded with 2,000 Frisian bulls weighing between 300 and 500 kg. And that boat will then head on to Libya, where they'll be going to. And then the other boat is the MV Sarah, and that's also in the West Mediterranean, and that's heading for Fines in Limerick. And that's also due to dock on Tuesday. So that boat will also be loaded with Frisian bulls, and that's also going to Libya. So both exporters have been very active over the last few weeks, assembling animals for these two loads. And then when you're looking at price, prices paid by the exporters are in around 160 to 170 kilo for live weight. And I suppose this is a positive move at the start of the year. Live cattle exports were back 7% last year to 250,000 head, but Wainland exports seen the biggest decline, with an increase on forward store and finished cattle export to the north. So Bord Bia is actually expecting the strong live export trade to Northern Ireland to hold for much of this year, and then good demand for beef across the water is underpinning this. So for third country markets, you know, while they were kind of quiet in 2021 with numbers down, they are expecting a recovery. So a positive kind of spin for the beef trade there.
Okay, about a minute left. Talking about the journal itself, and we read all really good news stories about it. Yourself and the editorial team and Justin must be very happy with the way the paper has grown, particularly during 2021 and even 20, given, you know, COVID was there.
Yeah, definitely. It's not without its challenges, I suppose. Positively, things are going well. Like there's a lot going on in farming, Jim, as you know. Like the new cap is going to come down the line next year, and this year, the rest of this year will be spent doing a deep dive into that and looking at what the changes are actually going to mean for farm payments, the new schemes that are coming into effect. That's going to form a big basis of it. We obviously have a new nitrates program coming as well. The deadline for that, for submissions, actually, if farmers want to have their say, is actually this Tuesday. It's only a couple of days left if you want to have your say on the new Nitrates Action Programme. We're obviously in the middle of starting calving now properly. And then milk prices are kind of very high for this time of year as well, for December milk, while there's a lot of, well, there's only a small cohort of farmers actually, I suppose, milking cows for liquid milk this time of year. You know, the mood is very, very positive in that direction. So there's a lot going on. I suppose some sort of a negative at this time of the year, I suppose, is the side of the pig side of things. And pig farmers were protesting last week, basically, on that in Dublin. You know, they're saying that they're on a fast trajectory to bankruptcy. But overall, otherwise, things are positive. And I suppose we can't let that go without, obviously, the fertiliser issues there as well. But that's kind of where things are.
Okay, well, looking for this morning, we'll leave it there. Thank you ever so much for joining us on this Saturday morning. That, listeners, was Amy Ford, who is the Deputy News Editor with the Irish Farmers Journal. That, listeners, is AgriPort for this week. I hope you enjoyed the show and that you will join me, Jim Finn, at the same time next week for another AgriPort on Tip FM. Coming up next is the news at 10 o'clock, and after that, Eamon de Wire presents Down Your Way.